You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main expanding countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. Well, it's all over bar the shouting now, and wouldn't you be annoyed if you'd invested your hard-earned cash into an HD DVD player? Australian consumers who purchased the now moribund Toshiba HD DVD players will receive no form of refund after the company officially announced its exit from the high-definition format war. In a recent press release, Toshiba confirmed its much-speculated exit and announced that come mid-March, all HD DVD shipments would cease. Toshiba Australia's Information Systems General Manager, Mark Whitted, said only a few thousand HD DVD players have been sold locally. Toshiba will now push the benefits of its HD DVD players, including the ability to play CDs and DVDs and internet connectivity that could possibly be used for video streaming in the future. So where does this leave Blu-ray? JB Hi-Fi Chief Executive Richard Utrips was reported to say that you're 3 to 5 years before we see Blu-ray outpace the standard DVD. Blu-ray libraries are slowly growing, but it can still be tricky to find a Blu-ray movie for rent in the local video shop. Don't forget that this is the format that supports high-definition recordings, and the take-up of HD in this country is somewhat slow. The writing was on the wall some time ago in Australia, and figures from a marketing analyst company, GFK, show that in 2007, Australians bought 177,000 Blu-ray movies and just 35,000 on HD DVD. So now this puts the dilemma of another Betamax VHS format war well and truly behind us, as we can now see clearly into the high-definition living room.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
What happens now after Toshiba's unceremonious exit from the HD DVD arena? Dodo complaint handling triggers ACMA investigation. The ABC boosts mobile offerings. Scammers dressing up as Telstra workers. And Telstra needlessly denied consumers on ADSL 2+. First up, though, here's what's been happening in the world of technology for this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
Tonight on Tech Talk News, the ABC boosts mobile offerings. Services underperform at Telstra. Dodo complaint handling triggers an ACMA investigation. And Microsoft seeks to replace Yahoo Board. This is Tech Talk News. And first, it's the announcement the world has been waiting for since Warner decided to ditch the HD DVD format in preference for Blu-ray. The official word from Toshiba that HD DVD has been discontinued. Toshiba Australia says that their parent company, the Toshiba Corporation, has undertaken a thorough review of its overall strategy for HD DVD and has decided it will no longer develop, manufacture and market HD DVD players. Toshiba confirmed its much-speculated exit and announced that come mid-March, all HD DVD shipments would cease. Speaking at a press conference in Sydney, Toshiba Australia General Manager Mark Whitted laid blame for the exit on several factors, including Warner Brothers' withdrawal of support for the format and reduced support from major retailers. Toshiba will also end volume production of HD DVD disc drives for such appliances as PCs and games in the same time frame. The company will continue to assess the position of notebook PCs with integrated HD DVD drives within the overall PC business relative to future market demand. And in a bitter sting to consumers, Australian consumers who purchase now moribund Toshiba HD DVD players will receive no form of refund after the company officially announced its exit from the high-definition format war. The ABC is again considering accepting advertising, this time as part of its expansion into the new medium of video mobile phones. The ABC plans to launch a mobile portal this year that will make television, radio and online content available to customers of any mobile phone network. Called an off-deck ABC mobile site, it is the biggest project this year for the National Broadcaster's Digital Strategy Unit, ABC Innovation, which manages the ABC website and develops new products for emerging digital media. The Innovation Unit, which has helped make the ABC the country's leading provider of podcasts and vodcasts, this week outlined a comprehensive suite of new media plans. They include the rollout of a comprehensive user-generated content strategy on ABC websites and a geographic search engine that would allow people to click on a Google Earth-style map to access ABC content relevant to that location. Advertising-supported, subscription-based and free-to-air models are being considered as part of the ABC's push into video mobile content. Telstra has reported a 12% slump in first-half information technology services revenue amid reports the company is preparing to offload its underperforming CAS business. Financial accounts for the 6 months to December 31st showed that IT services sales for the telco slipped from $242 million a year ago to $213 million, cementing the perception that CAS is failing to deliver. The weak IT services showing helped constrain total growth in Telstra's business services and applications division to an anemic 0.4%. Business services and applications revenue edged up from $499 million a year ago to $501 million. The decline in technology services revenue was in part driven by the sale of CAS's Australian Administrative Services, or AAS, business, partway through the first half of the 2007 financial year. Telstra executives said in the company's half-year report that the sale accounted for a $19 million decline in IT services revenue during the period. Dodo Australia is being investigated by the Australian Communications and Media Authority after it breached the Telecommunications Act for its handling of customer complaints. The inquiry was launched following advice from the Telecommunications Ombudsman, which highlighted a surge in customer complaints about the company's dispute resolution process. Dodo failed to act on the breach following an order by the ACMA in September last year. ACMA Chairman Chris Chapman said Dodo will be fined if it does not comply with the order. He went on to say, ACMA is using its formal enforcement powers in order to ensure that customers of Dodo are offered the same level of consumer protection as customers of other telecommunications providers. The ACMA still considers that Dodo has a sufficient way to go before it will become fully compliant with the complaint handling and billing codes, which are the important consumer protections we're interested in restoring. Microsoft has taken on a firm of corporate action specialists in a bid to replace the Yahoo Board of Directors, which formally declined the software giant's $44 billion US dollar offer made on the 1st of February. In a so-called proxy fight, Microsoft would hope to encourage investors to remove the existing Yahoo board, all of whom are up for nomination this year. A report in the New York Times on Tuesday suggested that Microsoft may instigate its proxy battle as soon as this week. The company would then have until the 14th of March to submit its own choice of directors for shareholders to approve. Yahoo, meanwhile, has quickly ushered in generous redundancy benefits for employees. I'm Graham Callaghan, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam has lost something absolutely vital because he didn't have a backup.
I've learnt the hard way, I must admit.
Celebrity personality voices.
Oh dear, say no more.
Yes.
If there's anything you see or do that makes you feel uncomfortable, turn the screen off and tell a teacher or an adult straight away.
We're now focusing on funding things in society and really responding to problems and what's called wicked problems out there in some instances.
There's a good web developer in the room.
have a chat after the show if you like.
There's a coincidence there.
It must be.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
Now,
it's not a camera.
Hey,
it takes blur.
Anyway, in her frustration, she emailed Microsoft this morning.
In French. They're the main force behind HD DVD, and if they do pull the plug like everyone's expecting them to, then that's the end of it.
Look, he's done it again. They are the most cumbersome, complicated, user-unfriendly.
We're going to be talking about things like personality theft, all those sort of things.
Identity theft.
That's the word.
I knew that's what you meant.
That's what I meant.
Who stole your personality?
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, the host of the show, and we have a panel of two of us tonight at the moment. There are more coming in, and there are other people that have making their apologies, including Dr. Ron, who is currently comatose in the living room of his house at the moment. They've been the mob that he works for have been working through the ringer. He's, anyway, comatose on the floor. Hello, Dr. Ron. Cheerio to you all, and I hope you had a good relaxing afternoon. Well, you didn't actually. Graham, how are you this evening?
I'm very well, thank you, Andrew.
How's your day? Obviously, it hasn't been as stressful as the good doctor's.
Well, apparently not, no. I thought I had a busy day, but yes, apparently work was just a bit too much for him today.
Yeah, we might be at a visit later on by JD. He's our Mac guru, probably popping in later on. Everyone's
sort of part-time panel member.
Yeah, well, full-time the way Dr. Ron's going. Oh, yeah. You said that. Anyway, it's been an interesting week in technology this week, too, with the demise of the HD DVD format.
Yes.
Official, I know we mentioned it last week.
Toshiba deciding to officially pull the pin. They did make the announcement that we were very strongly tipping last week.
So what does it mean to everybody, really? Well, we'll talk about that in just a moment. But there's a couple of interesting things that went across the desk today, which I thought I might start the top of the show with. Video, HD, high definition, people like moving that around their living room, desktop, network, wirelessly. But they're big files, aren't they, Graham?
They are.
Now, there's a new chipset which is potentially going to hit the marketplace in the not-too-distant future. Now, I don't know how it equates to anything that we traditionally know, you know, because we've got 802.11b and G, which are those things that we currently connect wirelessly with. And this is, we'll put it this way, NICTA, is an organisation who's, is the National Institute of, I'm not sure. anyway, they're Australia's peak information technology brains trust, and they've produced a prototype chip that can wirelessly shift big files from one device to another in seconds. Now, this is what we need if we're to move into the wireless world. We operate at the moment on 2.5 gigahertz, which is where the wireless 802.11bs and Gs are. That's what's in your laptop. You open your laptop up, turn on your wireless.
Yep. The problem with 2.5 gig is that
not only does your
wireless network operate on that frequency, but so do all your Bluetooth devices.
Put your tongue back in. The what? The Bluetooth.
The Bluetooth devices, like my little mouse I'm using here.
Yes.
And my cordless headphones at home.
They collide, don't they?
They, and also your cordless phone at home. There's a fair chance that works on 2.4 gig as well.
Oh, yeah, because you go into the white goods shop and you can actually see wireless network-friendly portable.
That operate on different frequencies.
Yeah.
Or take steps to avoid collisions, at least.
So there's a tip. And if you're out there looking for a cordless phone, get one which is wireless network-friendly. Otherwise, your neighbours will love you.
Yeah. Your microwave oven cooks food using 2.4 gigahertz.
Yes, but not at...
Seriously?
I know it does.
And my Bluetooth mouse goes crazy when the if I'm too close to the microwave.
Well,
and
what happens?
Off. Yeah, it
well, the mouse runs across the table.
The mouse pointer runs across the screen anyway.
Oh, is that what happens? I've never seen that before. That explains a lot of things, actually. Sorry.
Actually, it doesn't run across the screen, I lie. It just doesn't respond when I move the mouse.
Yeah,
it's like a jamming sort of to see.
Yeah. How does that make your microwave when it comes to safety? Because obviously there's something leaking out of that Faraday shield, that little mesh box inside the microwave. But
you're only talking very weak signals when you're talking about Bluetooth.
Yes.
It doesn't take a huge amount to... I'm not dreadfully in fear of my life from the 2.4 gig radiation from my microwave. I've got better things to worry about than that.
It's ultraviolet from the sun's a bit of a shocker these days.
That'll do a lot more harm a lot quicker.
Not on our show. But let's get back to this new chipset. These guys, the NICTA, has already had discussions with multinational makers of portable media devices over the potential use of this new chip. Now, with a data rate of 5 gigabits per second. That's fast.
That is a lot.
This is faster than we've ever had before, in a lot of respects.
That's orders of magnitude faster than what we've got.
Exactly. So with a data rate of 5 gigabits per second, the chip would also vastly speed up wireless home networks and office communication. Most wireless networks these days run on the 802.11g or the wireless G standard, which is on the 2.5 gig bandwidth, which is what we talked about before with microwaves. Yep. And it runs around 20 megabits per second on average. So that's 10 times, if not more, faster. How's your math, Andrew? Obviously, a lot faster. So
we're talking 1,000 times faster, aren't we?
Yes, I think, yes. 10 to the power of. Anyway, this chipset uses the 60 gig spectrum. So this is a lot higher in frequency. This is really microwave stuff.
Yeah.
So 60 gig, let me tell you, it's not going to go through the wall.
it's not going to go through much.
Yes, it's a very high frequency transmitter. In fact, it's probably almost going to be line of sight. Maybe even glass will block it. So it would be great for the office if you've got a central repository on the wall where these things can talk, or from laptop to laptop or machine or device to device, like you were saying there, Graham, which sits next to one another. But any further than that, I think it's going to be pushing a lot of trouble. So, but that's interesting. The commercialisation plan is to keep the project's intellectual property in Australia. Let's see if that happens. But if it's a good idea, I'm sure someone will buy it from overseas. You know, Google's got lots of money these days, and so has Microsoft. And by the end of the year, they would have started the company to actually manufacture it. So there's a bit of interesting news I saw. I thought, that's interesting, because it's going to be a huge problem when you think about what you want to do with your multimedia these days. As high def comes around, which is why we have Blu-ray now, not HD DVD. You want to move 50 gig, that's going to go pretty quick.
And what you've got to remember is, you talk about the resolution of a picture, how many dots there are in a given amount of space. So you might talk about the number of dots for the width of the screen. Now, if you double that, the resolution, you actually have to quadruple the size of the file it takes to store it, because it's a square medium.
Because
you've got two dimensions. You double it and then you square that to make it
big files.
How much effect it's going to have on your files. So, yeah, so if you've got a DVD that's on, you know, just short of 5 gigabytes, 4.7 gigabytes on a DVD, then if you double the resolution of that, then you're not going to 10, you're going to 20 gigabytes, and that's quite a big jump. That's a lot.
So as a result, this could be good technology for the not-too-distant future, because we need it. It's going to be the next generation.
Yes, absolutely.
So. All right, other interesting things in the news that sort of came across the table today, a lot of Telstra articles, which we'll talk about further down the show, but this one I thought I might mention. Optus has accused Telstra of shutting its $2.5 billion a year wholesale business, ending consultation with customers amid widespread claims that Sol Trujillo, the CEO, is crushing the once booming arm that sells network services. Now, this is in lieu of something else we're going to talk about. Lots of teasers tonight in the fact that we're sort of all speculating why we got ADSL 2 into exchanges.
That's right. Yes,
it just got turned on miraculously.
Yes. On the strength of what would appear to be a worthless guarantee from the government.
Yes, yes. And there's also a bit of a fracas starting to emerge between ISPs and Telstra and the ACCC, saying, why can't we have access to ADSL2 exchanges, or Telstra's ADSL2? Now, the ACCC have come out and said there's no need to regulate it because it's a different technology. The government can give no guarantee to regulate it. And now we're starting to see Telstra's competition, because for those of you living beyond Australia, Telstra is our incumbent telco, and they would have
the former government-owned monopoly since privatised.
Yes, now it's owned by three Americans. I mean, there's all sorts of pros and cons there for what's going to happen with Telstra and what's going to happen with Optus and other ISPs, because it is going to be a fairly interesting time coming up now that they've unlocked ADSL2. All right, Graham, on to other things. Toshiba pulling out of the HD DVD realms. Let's have a bit of a chat about this. Sony is now really the official winner. So they only have won
finally
the format.
They won a format war.
In the domestic market, which I think is very important, because if you look at the traditional sort of avenues of what they've been competing in, you've had the mini disc format, which has been sort of now dead and buried. And prior to that, we had the cassettes. And even before that, Walkmans. Remember the Walkmans? The CD Walkmans and the cassette Walkmans and things like that?
Hmm.
So now it looks like Sony have actually had a bit of a win because they are the backer of the Blu-ray technology,
yeah,
which is going to revolutionise our new high-definition lounge room, really.
Yep. And all those people that have been holding off, you know, not wanting to get stuck with a, you know, the equivalent of the old Beta tape machine,
mm-hmm.
they can now go ahead with a bit more confidence. So hopefully it'll move the market forward.
It's funny you should mention Beta, because it was a great format. It just didn't stick. The marketing power of those who knew VHS was bigger and better at the time. Now, with the advent of Beta, because we use it professionally in the field, we have a format called Betacam,
yes,
which is the same cassette housing as what Beta Max was, which was the domestic format. But we now have, how would you say, we get 40 minutes onto what used to be a three-hour tape, and it's all digital now. It's really good.
Okay, so, stunningly good quality and all that. Yeah,
absolutely. So it's Sony, very big in broadcast, and now they're trying to find their way back into the domestic thing. So Sony won the home movie DVD format for it, but the consumer electronics giant faces an even tougher battle pursuing shoppers to buy Blu-ray discs in an industry which is looking to download down to the download era. So this is, interesting.
So the speculation is that they might not have won one because, you know, ultimately both HD, DVD and Blu-ray will lose out to downloads.
Yes.
Is that's the idea there, isn't it?
Yes.
Hmm.
But I don't think it's going to be too much of a problem in this country with our bandwidth and the likes.
No. Would be quite a challenge to download much high-def content over some of our ADSL.
Absolutely. But the DivX format, now that's the... predominantly, I'd say that'd be what's mainly downloaded these days.
Yeah,
DivX.
Yeah.
It's a free to use codec, which is a little program which plays and records video in very
codec,
small file
codec formats. Codec is a kind of a shortened word that it means coder decoder.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get the word codec. So
yep.
It's an encoder and decoder program.
Yep.
So,
and that's it. Does some amazing picture quality. Like it can take what would be 4.7 gigs on a DVD. Of a movie, for example, and make it fit on a standard CD, the old 700 meg format.
That's right.
And the quality is sensational. You might not get the 5.1 surround for all those home movie enthusiasts, but at the end of the day...
Well, there's no reason why you can't have that. You can always mix a good quality AC3 sound stream with a DivX video stream, so there's no problem there. And in fact, the DivX is one of the formats that's based on the MPEG-4 standard,
mm-hmm.
which is also used by Windows Media Player 9, and the latest QuickTime codecs use MPEG-4 as well. So
yep.
That kind of encoding is kind of almost universal now.
So that's Sony's woes. They're thinking that they might be a victim of downloads, but I think the people who, you know, the audiophiles, the videophiles of the world who love their good quality DVDs and stuff, I don't think they're... You're still going to buy the disc or buy the movie and stuff like that. So there's a bit of a fire sale on, as we alluded to early on in the day, with Japan. This came in today from one of my favourite feeds, Uber Gizmo. Japan pulls HD DVDs off the shelves now. With the HD DVD war now being really dead and buried, according to this article, Japan is the first country to pull off these HD DVDs off their shelves. So, and there were probably, I think I was reading some other articles about Toshiba Australia saying there was about 1,000 or 1,500 people bought their units here in Australia, and they're not going to get any refund.
No, and I also heard that they won't be taking stock returns from retailers either. So, I'm not sure whether
that.
I heard that as a rumor. I don't know whether it's true, but if a retailer's got unsold stock, that they're going to have to either sell it or find something else to do with it.
Microsoft Xbox 360, they're halting production of the HD DVD drive to go into their boxes.
Yep, that Microsoft announcement came out just a couple of days ago. Yeah.
Yep. So I think it's really the writing is now on the wall. Blu-ray. I think it was Warner that started it all. They decided, no, we're not going to support HD DVD. And Toshiba, who was basically the main instigator behind the new formats, have decided, no, well, we're not going to do it. If you guys aren't supporting us, then thanks all the same. But anyway, it's good for the consumer because now it's all out in the open. There's only one format to buy, and we can all go along and spend our $600 cash at the moment and buy yourself a Blu-ray disc and plug it into your plasma telly, your LCD telly or something like that. Justin Dunlop, have you bought your HD DVD player yet?
Good evening. No, I was waiting for this to all settle down. So now that it has, I just need to go and scrape the cash up.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. I think we've all been sitting on the proverbial fence waiting for the HD DVD to sort of either make it or break it, and it finally broke. So.
And Apple haven't decided to put anything in their products yet. So. Yeah.
Well, Apple are going the other way, aren't they? They're trying to remove optical drives from their devices altogether at the moment, aren't they?
And well, the MacBook
Use
yeah,
somebody else's.
That's right.
They give you a bit of software now, so you can use someone else's optical drive. Good the aeroplane though, really, you have your nice thin notebook. Can I use your DVD player to watch my movie? Sorry. How's your week been, JD? You've been busy? Anything exciting happening?
Exciting happening? Oh, now you've put me on the spot.
Technically wise, I'm not interested in your other things, but yes. Technically wise?
Look, Apple have, just if you're watching the MacTalk.com.au forums that I frequent fairly often, there's been a bit of a trend that Apple released something every Tuesday for most of this year.
Really?
And last Tuesday was the iPod Shuffle 2GB model.
Oh, wow. So now you can get 2 gigabytes of compressed MP3 sounds in your ears.
You can, and yep. You can get the old 1 gigabyte for about two-thirds the original price. So.
Well, there's a bargain.
Mm. Now, shame I just bought one before the announcement.
Yeah, well, it's always the way, isn't it? You just have to bite the bullet when it comes to buying technology because, 3 months things tend to get superseded or a new model comes out? I couldn't think about it. Like, look at DV cameras, those home movie things.
Yeah,
you know, DV cams. Yeah, every 3 months, I think Sony supersedes with a new one that does a bit more.
Oh, and every time another brochure lands in your letterbox, that they've got cheaper. So yeah, you can't win buying gadgets that way. You've got to look at it at the time and do the best you can. But the shuffle you're talking about, that's the postage stamp size one that clips on your sleeve. Is that the right
that's
one?
That's right. I've taken it out of my pocket. But I had the first generation shuffle, which I thought was pretty good, about the size of some chewing gum in a wrapper.
Yeah.
But my wife actually bought her own. We won't go there. She's got her own shuffle, and it's one of the new models, which is postage stamp size, and now 2 gigs.
Is it getting too small, do you think?
I think the issue with the first generation, because it was long and thin and it looked really small, but the reality was it was actually difficult to carry, so you had to have a special device.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the new one comes with its own little clip and you can clip it on your belt or your lapel or whatever. So I think from that point of view, if you want something to run around with and you don't mind if it falls off and breaks at $100 or whatever,
well, that's
it's
it.
Probably
it's
not too bad.
It's disposable, isn't it, now these days? Just buy it, give it to the kids and see if it lasts a couple of weeks.
That's right. So be lucky to do that in my house.
Yeah, well, come visit my house too, yeah. We alluded to earlier on in the show that Telstra is obviously rolling out its ADSL2 and it turned on the floodgates the other day for no apparent reason. Internode is asking the ACCC for access to the Telstra ADSL2 Plus network, along with 9 other ISPs. They've all rallied together to urge the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission to intervene and restrain Telstra from denying wholesalers access to its ADSL2 broadband infrastructure. Telstra recently announced that it would activate high-speed ADSL2 Plus broadband in more than 900 telephone exchanges for the purpose of retail sale. However, it was believed that by Internode that Telstra would not be obliged to offer its ADSL2 expansion as wholesale services to other ISPs. Now, that's what I was under the impression
of,
too,
which
is what the government had been saying, and also with what, who were the other guys? ACCC were saying, that they weren't planning on regulating it. The protesting ISPs, which include IINet, Internode, TCN Communications and Westnet, issued a 9-page letter to the ACCC chairman, Mr. Graham Samuel, requesting the ACCC to issue an urgent competition notice under part whatever it is of the Trade Practices Act. Additionally, it urges the commission to re-examine declaring regulation access to all DSL, which is ADSL1 and ADSL2, or digital subscriber line broadband services, especially in areas where competition through alternative broadband platforms is unavailable. So here we go. This is going to be the beginning of all these people saying, well, hang on a sec, Telstra, you're playing your ADSL2 cards close to their chest.
Yep.
Which is, I think, what they're entitled to do. Or are they? Other people might have an opinion on this. But we're now going to start seeing all this probably appear again in the mainstream media. And I think Telstra's going to say, no, sorry.
Well, yeah, I think it also depends on how Telstra handle the advantage they'll get in the market from this. I just flicked onto the Whirlpool page, and one of the lines they've got on their front page there is, By excluding competitors from wholesale access, Telstra can lure customers from ISPs, other ISPs, into 2 or 3 year contracts. Now, if Telstra start going on with that behaviour, in i.e. signing people up to outrageously long contracts, then I think the ACCC will be moved to do something about it. Whereas if Telstra act a little bit more responsibly than that, then maybe the ACCC will be able to allow things to go as they are.
It's funny you should mention that, actually. In the snail mail at home tonight, when I popped in for a quick 5 minutes on the way through, there was a letter from Telstra flogging their broadband services from $14.90-something or other a month.
Yep.
If you sign a contract or all that sort of stuff. Now, let me tell you the fine print. They had lots and lots of fine print on the thing. Basically what they were saying is, up, you're going to pay at least $1,875. Don't quote me on this because I don't have the document in front of me, but I thought...
But let me guess, the $14.95 was just the introductory price and it doubles after a few months?
Oh, I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. But that's what I think consumers need to be aware of. And who in their right mind would sign a contract for a telecommunications product, whether it be mobile data, fixed line internet or whatever, in the current marketplace? Things change so rapidly every 6 months and you're going to be left holding the baby.
Yeah, well, certainly any contract longer than a year is outrageously long. But the problem is that you say who in their right mind would sign it. But, of course, the average consumer out there doesn't have the level of contact that you and I have with the market to realise how quickly things are moving, and they don't realise that that's going to trap them and how badly they're going to get trapped.
There's also, I think, a level of trust still with Telstra, with a lot of people, potentially those who, as you say, are unsure of technology or technologically challenged, I guess would probably still tend to turn to an organisation like the big telcos because they are big.
Yeah, and you think they're the big name and they'll do the right thing by you, and
every single time that Telstra abuse that trust, they lose a lot more than they really are counting on, I suspect. Mm. So everyone can contribute to their $1.5 or whatever it was, billion-dollar profit that they had the other day, and I noticed that they're still having to borrow to pay the shareholders' dividends. I think that's an interesting sign.
That's an extraordinary thing for a company to be doing, isn't it?
Their accountants obviously advised them well. So, now, whilst we're on the subject of Telstra, and this came across, scammers. There's a Telstra scam out there. People are doing door knocks, dressing up as Telstra workers. Let me tell you, someone looking like Sol Trujillo came to my front door.
He'd regret it, would he?
Well, I don't know whether he'd regret it. He'd probably be cop an earful, but it'd be a bit of a shock, wouldn't it? G'day, Sol. How are you at the door? But no, all jokes and fun aside, Telstra has warned consumers across Australia to beware of fraudsters posing as Telstra staff, as well as hoax emails seeking financial data. Same old, same old. Telstra has been inundated by calls from customers, predominantly from regional New South Wales, regarding door-to-door knockers posting as employees of the telco. So, like everything, whether it be in the online world or whether it be on the front door world, just check your bona fides of the people coming through.
Yeah, I think in general the thing is, if they come to you, whether it be if they ring you or if they arrive on your doorstep or if they email you, then don't trust them. They're probably not who they say they are. If you want to deal with Telstra, ring one of Telstra's numbers or go to a Telstra shop. You know, deal with them directly, but you contact them. That way you know you're talking to who you think you are.
Absolutely. And that goes right down the line with everyone. You know, your gut instincts are very important, and otherwise you will. There's people out there, shonky people, that thrive on, you know, people's inability to do these sort of things, ring up and check and do stuff. But, yes, I'd be dealing directly with a phone company. A lot of electricity companies do door-to-door knocks and things like that in our area. Do you get that?
Just coming to my mind today is the fact that the gas company turned up uninvited and changed our gas meter today. That was a bit unpleasant.
Really? That's a pretty big scam.
I don't think it was a scam. I presume it was because they left a fairly convincing looking gas meter behind.
Yeah, they probably. They didn't reroute your DNS server while they were there or anything like that, did they?
No. Very, very unlikely they would have been able to get access to do that.
Ah, yes. Well, no, I think that was a legitimate transaction there. Old for the new.
Yeah.
So, and the other interesting Telstra gossip this week too was Mr. Conroy has come out and basically sort of saying Telstra has potentially needlessly denied consumers access to ADSL 2+.
Yeah, for months and months and a very, very long time.
Well, yes, Senator Coonan was of that way inclined too. She was thinking they could have turned it on ages ago. So
the equipment's been in the exchange for lots of the exchanges for a long, long time.
Mm. And also this new filter Mr. Conroy's given the green light to, but we might try and talk a little bit about that down the track as well. Content filters that'll slow everybody down. If we haven't got slow enough internet access right now, then you just wait. You just wait. Some emails. Jeff Dudley. G'day, Jeff. Listening to us on the stream, which is really good. Oh, there's an email here from Dr. Ron. Oh. Sounding good, guys. Going to bed. Have a good show.
Nighty-night.
Yes. Mike Jacobs is listening to us on the stream in Perth too. G'day, Mike, as well. So that's all good. All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, what are we going to talk about? Oh, the ABC. They're at it again. My favourite people when it comes to internet. They're doing all sorts of good things in the digital world.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Eddie's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to.
She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped in the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking to the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service.
How does it go?
It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
That you are indeed. Welcome back to the show. Andrew McComb here, Graham Callaghan, and Justin Dunlop joins us. He's very kindly decided to come in this evening and help us out on the panel because, boy, do we need a bit of help this evening. yes, it's been a long day already. But anyway, let's talk about a few things. The ABC in particular, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, which is probably the best online presence of any media organisation in this country, bar none, really. They have the best.
That's a fair comment.
Podcasting, vodcasting, video on demand, streaming of basically every single radio station that they have in the country. So no matter where you are, anywhere in the world, you can hear it. What better service can you get from that? Well, apparently you might be able to get a little bit more. The ABC is going to try and up the ante, and as you alluded to earlier in the news this evening, Graham, too, maybe there's a potential here of getting some advertising dollars to recoup some costs here from the ABC, but they plan to launch a mobile portal so we can get it, you know, yeah, instead of having to rely on Hutchison's 3 for the cricket or something like that, we can get a mobile portal to our handset and potentially watch maybe ABC News. Or
yeah, or presumably a lot of the same content, but just with the interface tweaked so it'll work properly on a very small screen, on a mobile phone or a handheld PC.
So, and then you'll just need to find a provider that's going to deliver that content to your device without taking a mortgage on your second or third mortgage on your house. So, anyway, called an off-deck ABC mobile site. It is the biggest project this year for the National Broadcasters Digital Strategy Unit. And they obviously that's what they do. They develop new products for the emerging digital media environment. The Innovation Unit, which has helped make the ABC the country's leading provider of podcasts and vodcasts, has outlined its new plans, so which includes the rollout of comprehensive user-generated content strategy. What does that mean, do you reckon?
User-generated? YouTube.
Potentially? Yep. Yeah, maybe you'd be able to watch Rage and all your clips so the younger generation can have a bit of a download off the portal. But how's that going to... anyway, well, we're purely speculating here. So
I think it's going to mean that the users are going to have more say in what the content is. So there'll be a lot of feedback channels, so you'll be able to put your opinions back into the programs, I suspect.
Well, that'd be good.
So whether it might, with Rage, you might be able to have a vote on what the video clips are, or to push, you know, the more popular video clips. With current affairs programs, you might be able to have more feedback from listeners and more you know, Vox Pop type opinions.
Just go and whip up this report now, please. Yeah.
Well, you never know.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. If you've got any thoughts on this, we'd like to hear from you, regardless of whether you're listening to us live on the pod.
Yeah, we have user-generated content.
We do.
It's called forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Absolutely.
Join up there and have your say.
Yes, and how is the forum going, Graham? Must admit, it's been a bit...
It's ticking along, it's going all right, yeah.
A while between drinks for me, unfortunately, up there, it's just the way things are at the moment, so...
I think we all struggle from time to time to log on as regularly as we should.
Well, a lot of us are fighting operating systems and getting our computing world happening together. You know, I'm having dilemmas at the moment with this little beastie that's sitting here. I'm lucky to get an email at the moment.
Everything works except web browsing.
Yeah, I don't know why that's the case. It's like,
very strange fault you've got over there.
We're going to go have a bit of a look at that later. But nonetheless, let's talk about Vista. Antiviruses and Windows Vista Service Pack 1 not mixing well, apparently.
This is a curious little problem where apparently some antivirus products get disabled when you install Service Pack 1 for Windows Vista, which admittedly not many people have got their hands on yet, because it's only been given to people that are manufacturing it, pre-installing it on brand new machines.
Mm-hmm.
But
it overcomes the incompatibility problem. It just removes it altogether.
Well, that's exactly Microsoft's point. Maybe there's new features in Vista that the antivirus providers perhaps haven't taken into account, and it disables the incompatible driver. But you'd think they would have, they would have had enough dialogue with the antivirus vendors to have sorted this out by now.
Microsoft had a little project called Defender. Do you remember that?
Mm.
Is it now?
No, Defender is still going strong. Defender's a great product. It's not an antivirus, though. It's purely anti-spyware.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of, I thought, maybe they should stick with doing what they do best, make operating systems and office software, rather than get into the antivirus, anti-spyware.
But do that well.
Well, I don't know. As we alluded to last week on the show, you put Office 2007 over an old Office 2003 and your dictionary and Outlook turns French.
That's another strange little glitch. But is it
a bug or a feature?
To answer the question, do they do that well? If popularity is a guide, then yes, they do.
But it's not. You can't measure it on popularity. It's a bit like Lotus Notes. Anyone who ever bought an IBM system just got that complimentary. And let me tell you the amount of hours of wasted time you'll have getting emails through that. But that's another story altogether.
I don't mind Lotus Notes, by the way. So.
Oh, good. All right, we'll move on then. JD, how did you go? You said during you've uploaded and upgraded and
your
bandwidth limit has exceeded now because you chose to go to an Office 2007.
That's right. My wife's laptop was running a bit slow, has been for a while, and I'm trying to tell her to buy a Mac, but she won't for the moment. Still sowing the seed. But I reinstalled Windows XP because it's about the only thing this thing will run, and then had to go through the various upgrades, and that took about half a day. And then I put Office 2007 on because I had to go and buy it new. We wanted the new features.
Mm-hmm.
Installed that. That took a little while, and then discovered there was a 200 and something megabyte download for a Service Pack 1 plus all the other features. So it took about 10 hours to reinstall this laptop.
That's not uncommon. I had to do that recently too with someone's laptop, and by the time you try and restore from the restore disks and find them and rebuild everything from the ground up, which is potentially what I'm going to do with the machine sitting next to me very shortly, it does. It takes a bit of... and then I'm going to have to go through the angst of getting Microsoft to let me put my Office back on again.
Now, just a question. I know that with Linux distributions you have the same issue, that you install from the distribution disks, and then there can be a couple of hundred meg of updates to download with security fixes and bug fixes and all that goes along. Does this not happen with Macintosh? Does
The
OS X not have lots and lots of updates if you install it from the disks?
There are updates, that's true. The interesting one was McAfee, actually, because my wife also bought a new version of McAfee to put on.
Oh, yes.
And
antivirus product.
That's right. So I put in the CD. It started up, and it asked me, well, I could install off the CD, but it's really old. Why don't you just download it now?
Very sensible. Yeah. I must admit, I do that all the time. It's absolutely standard practice at the office. We use the CA, what used to be VET, it's now belongs to CA antivirus. And standard practice is to
unpack the box and just read the serial number off the disc and download the latest version off the website, and you don't even put the CD in the drive. Because get the latest version. There's absolutely no point. You may as well just download the current version.
Did you know that you can't put CDs in the recycle bin? They're not recyclable. You have to put them in the rubbish bin. They go to landfill.
After you put a big scratch in them or shatter them or something.
Whatever you do. Yeah. But, yeah, they're not recyclable.
Some people have CD shredders. Have you seen those? You can put a CD through your little shredder.
Oh, gee, that sounds like a heavy-duty device, doesn't it? Just an email from Peter H. from the One Stop VoIP Shop in Sydney. Guys, not sure if you saw this, because we didn't mention it in the newsletter. No, I didn't. I didn't know about it. So he thought he'd give us a heads up. Microsoft released Windows XP Service Pack 3, Release Candidate 2, last week.
As it's
a Release Candidate 2, Peter decided to brazenly go into no man's land and download it and install it. And then on the email it says, in capital letters, it works!
Amazing.
So there you go. There's an endorsement from one of our regular listeners in Sydney.
That's good, because what we do is we do tend to hang off and wait and hear those reports from those who are brave enough to do what Peter's done.
Well, you see, looking on my wife's laptop, looking for the updates, I actually went to the Microsoft site and said, okay, what's the latest service pack? And I saw the service pack 3, didn't notice the release candidate bit on it.
Oh, really?
And downloaded it. But, of course, it wouldn't install because it didn't have service pack 1 installed at that point. So anyway.
Remind me to give you a Slipstream CD.
What is Slipstream, by the way?
Oh, Slipstream is...
I've seen this.
Yeah, Slipstream is when you apply the service pack to the install media. So if I've got a Windows XP CD that I install from, and Service Pack 2 comes out, what you do, and Microsoft do this for you now, the new disks come out with Service Pack 2 already built into it, but if you had an old one and you wanted to put Service Pack 2, and you can do a process called slipstreaming to add the Service Pack to the installer so that when it installs, it's already got the Service Pack there.
Are you with him?
Oh, yeah, we used to do this on Windows NT.
That's right, yes.
Okay, good. All right, maybe I'll listen back on the podcast and we'll double-check that one. But
I promise I made sense. And, yeah, Service Pack 3 for Windows XP is, yeah, very close to release by the look of it.
How long has it... It's been a while between service packs for Microsoft.
It's been a long time in
XP?
The making, yeah. I think it's 2003 or 4 was Service Pack 2.
Can't remember the
looking
date
around
it.
The room, it would be around about that. And, yeah, the rumour is, though, that Service Pack 3 is going to make Windows XP even faster.
Well, that'd be good.
Ooh, need that.
So, what about Vista? Are they going to drop Vista and go back to XP?
Well, the interesting thing is that the rumours say that Service Pack 1 for Vista, which is also, as we were saying, it's been released to manufacturing, hasn't been released to the public yet, doesn't make Vista any faster.
I've only got one machine with Vista, and it's not that fast already, but we'll see. It only does word processing and what else does it do? Email and web, that's about it. So. JD, how are they going in Macworld? We had 10.2 last week, or 10 point, what was
10.5.2.
Yeah, we're up to 10.5.3 this week, another 343 meg download on the site yet, or what?
I hadn't noticed that. There's a new version of iTunes, I think you might have spoken about last week.
Another one?
And another version
I've turned the notifications off for iTunes now. Every week you get one.
My iTunes wanted me to upgrade last time I started it, but I was in a hurry, so I didn't let it.
Yeah, well, I actually installed iTunes on my wife's laptop. There's a bit of a story about my wife's laptop today. And I've got
a good case study.
Real-world scenarios, yes. Yeah.
So the machine runs fast. The lowdown is the machine runs faster for booting and so forth, which you could hope. And certainly Office, Word and so forth fire up really quickly. iTunes is a real dog. Takes forever to start up.
How many songs have you got? Because I've got...
Oh, a few thousand.
Yeah, exactly. I've got in the work machine, because we do this stuff professionally, all the music libraries from the record companies when they get sent across. And the current track total is over 120,000 tracks in iTunes. And it is. It's very much a hit the iTunes button, go and get a coffee or alt-tab off and go and do something else while it loads the database. But once it's loaded... She's pretty good.
But I run iTunes on my fairly old Mac. It's a Mac Cube, for those that know what a Mac Cube is all about. It's about 10 years old, thereabouts. But iTunes on my machine starts up fairly quickly, even though it's quite old technology. And, in fact, it's loading the database over the wireless network. So, you know, if it was going to be slow, it would be really slow. But it's actually not bad. So.
Curious. Yeah, so they haven't quite got their database handling right on the Windows platform.
On the Windows side, by the sound of it.
Yeah, I haven't. I must try it on the Mac. That sounds very interesting test. Maybe someone out there who's done the test, whether it works well on a Mac as opposed to a PC. Who knows? Send us in. Feedback, techtalkradio.com.au. Mr. Conroy has given the green light for ISP filterings and a $4.7 billion broadband plan at his first industry address. So he's off and running.
Ah, the great plan to slow down Australia's broadband.
Absolutely.
Good now, on you, Senator Conroy.
You must sort of wonder whether he's got the same advisers as Mr. Coonan.
Senator Coonan, yes.
Senator Stephen Conroy gave his first major address to the IT industry as the new Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy. That's a fairly
big
interesting
title,
isn't it? I wonder if you made that up or it was ceremoniously given to him or something. Sorry, I did see spam a lot the other day too. I don't know why that just comes to mind when I read that out. Anyway, yes, at a gala dinner evening last week where he outlined the government's future ICT goals, including its fibre-based broadband plans, digital education reform and ISP-level filtering, all of which are fairly contentious issues at the moment. Speaking at the dinner, Conroy related the government's he reiterated the government's commitment to build the $4.7 billion high-speed fibre-based broadband network. And he didn't elaborate on the government's plans. He's still offering tenders or after tenders for people, whether they want to take it to the house or whether they want to take it to the node is still to be seen. But he's sort of saying, give us a business model from anyone, and if it works, we'll go with it. So, yes, he also spoke of Labor's education revolution, pledging to invest $1 billion to ensure secondary school students could participate effectively in the digital landscape. Well, I'd suggest that you start looking at your infrastructure, Sonny Jim, and
yes.
Make sure that you get a half-decent backbone going. Because, yes, even though we can connect, well, actually, some of us who now can connect at high speeds, ADSL2 and the likes, when you go further afield, it's very slow still. Have you noticed that? Any of you boys noticed that when you're dealing to the US or something?
Depends very much on who you're talking to, yeah.
I find Russian servers are very quick these days. Don't know why.
That's curious. Yeah, I don't know why that is.
Anything out of Europe or out of Russia is blindingly fast, like, you know, a megabit per second down, but anything out of the States, 200K if you're lucky.
Excessively crowded, undersea cables.
Yeah. And by the way, speaking of undersea cables, you haven't had any telemarketing calls lately, have you?
No.
No, neither have I. They've disappeared off the face of the earth thanks to that Egyptian sea vessel.
They're
trawler
still trying to repair those cables,
are
they?
Those underwater cables, yeah. They can't get anything out of Calcutta at the moment, so we obviously paid them well.
What a shame.
Yes. Yes, two cables in one area and one cable in another area. So thank you to whoever that was from the bottom of our hearts. Yeah, so there you go. And, of course, the ISP filter is still on the cards too at the moment. I really don't know how he's going to do that. He said that Labor has never argued that ISP filtering is a silver bullet solution, but it's an important step in the overall strategy to make the internet a safer place for children. Well, I would have thought education would have been probably the place where that strategy would be.
Yep.
You know, having spoken about what we did last week with the Telstra Foundation, we had a lovely lady in representing them, Georgia Simmons, who came in and told us all about the grants that are up for grabs for small groups that are trying to do just that, educate our kids and make it safer online for them.
Is much more the strategy we need to go for.
Let's talk about DVD John. Do you remember
who?
Him? DVD John. He's a legend.
Is he?
Yeah, he's the man who broke the encryption on DVDs. So
DCSS bloke.
That's the man.
I know who he is now,
that's the man.
He's my hero.
Exactly. I'm surprised you... Who? Anyone who knows anything about DVD John knows he's a bit of a legend because he's very quick in breaking into the copy protection system on certain things, including digital rights management and things like that, which has been plaguing the music industry for years and years, thanks to Microsoft's Zune technology and Apple's iTunes Store. But now they've
gone. Some of Sony's more notorious efforts as well.
Oh, yes. That was a laugh. Remember that? The CD that came out that...
With a rootkit on it.
Yes, that absolutely obliterated, put nasty things on your... Yeah, thanks, Sony. That was a good idea, that one, wasn't it? Anyway, back to where we go. DVD John is going to liberate our media.
Oh.
According to IT News, a Double Twist Corporation, the company formed by the infamous hacker DVD John, unveiled its first product today, described as a platform developed to helping consumers liberate their media. Founded in March 2007 by DVD John and a collection of others, Double Twist claims that its intention is to allow consumers to access digital medias on the widest ranges of devices. The widespread adoption of electronic devices has enabled consumers to create and consume digital media on an unprecedented scale. So therefore, he's got a fairly sizable market out there, which means you can download something on iTunes and play it on anything other than iTunes in your car. Because iTunes does let you burn to a CD, doesn't it?
Yes.
I recall, because I've done that. But I don't know if you download from other organisations whether the digital rights management actually prevents you from moving it off the device you've downloaded it on.
It depends very much. There's lots and lots of different schemes out there.
There is. So there you go, TVG John. Keep an eye out for him because he does all sorts of good things with the consumer in mind.
Hmm.
Not so much with the record companies in mind. And we're not supporting, you know, you like the song, go and buy it because it's traditionally what you do. You listen to the radio, you like a song, you go and buy it.
I've got no problem with paying for my music or whatever, or paying for my videos. It's then being restricted that I can't watch it on my Linux machine, or I can't watch it on my iPod,
can't
or I
move
can't
it
move it to another device. Yeah.
Yes.
That, once you've paid for it and you've paid for the right to watch it, that's very annoying as a consumer.
You could set up a central server.
Yes.
Which I've done, and then you can stream it to anything you like.
Just so that's certainly one approach.
Just so you can watch something in the other room. Well, see, what is it? Apple brought out the Apple TV Mark II the other day, purely, and the only difference from what I can understand is that it actually supports online downloads.
Correct. So you don't have to actually have a computer download it first and then onto your Apple TV.
Now, I know that
there's not much use in Australia because iTunes Australia Store doesn't have video content.
Well, that was par for the course, really. You look at when iTunes was originally rolled out here in Australia, we were the last because they couldn't do a deal with the record companies in this land. Very frustrating, and I suspect the same is occurring here when it comes to television.
And yet I still had to upgrade iTunes so that it would support renting of movies.
That's right, even though you can't access it. The one thing with the Apple TV, you can hack it nicely, so you can get it to play other codecs and do all sorts of other things. You do, however, break the warranty.
Right.
He's opened up a can of worms now, hasn't he? You can hack it nicely. So what does that mean? You can wirelessly connect to something else on your machine and it'll play anything?
You can use something other than iTunes. You can use, you were talking about DivX earlier, you can use other codecs on it other than the Apple-approved ones.
I must admit, I do like Apple's H.264 codec. Have you seen the picture quality off that? You get the trailers on their movie site in high def. That's stunning quality.
Yeah, I'm using the Elgato iHome. I've probably talked about it before, which is a similar product from about 5 years ago, which actually doesn't allow me to use that codec, so I haven't seen it yet.
Mm. Yes, codecs. There's another story for another show too, isn't it? We won't get too techie at the moment. Well, in fact, we might take a break, and when we return, we're going to have a bit of a view from the couch from Adam Turner, and we're going to be talking about things called e-books. Heard of them?
Yeah, I have,
Yeah, good. I think that's pretty much where it stands at the moment, so we'll find out more about that from Adam when we return.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual power. And I've got some residual
power. You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over 70 fingerprints. Now,
this we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilos.
Don't open things with as good as you're not expecting, even if they do a full
stop. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Yes, Andrew McComb here, Justin Dunlop and Graham Callaghan at the panel this evening talking about all things technologically related. And speaking of some technology, our streams are under an immense amount of duress this evening, apparently, according to emails that have been flooding into the laptop over here, because I can get emails.
But that's all.
No, everything else. I just can't browse the web for some strange reason at the moment. Our gurus are onto it. I'm still getting all the spam too.
So the streams are so popular that they're starting to
board down the web.
Under the
they're
weight.
Struggling. Yes, it means we're going to have to do something about that. But anyway, welcome aboard wherever you may be listening to us around the country, around the globe. Yes, send us your feedback. We like hearing from you, even if it's just a cheerio. Or sign up to our newsletter on the front page, techtalkradio.com.au. Right-hand side, about halfway down, you can get a newsletter there.
And yeah, that's really cool, actually. It gives you an email that tells you what's going to be on the show.
It is. And it gives you links down there, too, which is sort of like have a click and have a bit of read of what we think's pretty impressionable and trendy at the moment, including get your Mac download here for 10.5.2, and I'll have to put one on next week for Get Your XP Service Pack 2 one here, thanks to our friends up north. So that's good. Thanks, Peter. All right, well, let's back to the rundown here. E-books.
E-books. Yeah, these things have been being threatened to be inflicted on us for a long time, and no one seems to have got it right yet.
What is an e-book?
It's an electronic book.
Oh, thanks. it tells you a story or something, doesn't it? You can sit back there and bring your headphones on, and while you're lying in bed, you can listen to us.
You read it off the screen.
You can read it, yep.
Yeah. Photos. You have some sort of a device that you hold in your hand instead of holding a book in your hand. You hold an electronic device in your hand, and you read your book.
Oh, so like a laptop.
Or a handheld computer, or an e-book reader dedicated device.
Oh, okay. Well, here's what Adam had to say about e-books in our View for the Couch for this week.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
E-books are one of those technologies that have been the next big thing for years, but never seems to quite hit the big time. They're basically books in an electronic format, designed to be read on portable devices capable of storing hundreds of novels. Think of it like an iPod for your book collection. So, what's holding e-books back? The lack of devices, the lack of content, the fact that people are still attached to DTM, the dead tree medium? I'd say it's a combination of all those factors, even though individually they don't stand up. There are plenty of e-book compatible devices around, and a few have had good reviews and plenty of publicity. Amazon US is plugging the Kindle e-book reader on the front page of the site, although it retails for $399 US, for which you can buy a hell of a lot of paperbacks. The Sony reader is slightly more affordable at $299 US. Now the Iliad looks interesting, and it's had good reviews. It doesn't use a traditional LCD screen, so it's supposed to be easier on the eyes and have a longer battery life. Still, at a whopping $699 US, it's not going to make it into many Christmas stockings. Technology-wise, these e-book readers may be up to the task, but I can't see them going mainstream until they can get down to the $100 US mark, which of course won't happen until they go mainstream. It's a classic chicken and egg scenario. Perhaps a new player will step in to revolutionise the market, like Apple did with music and the iPod. I don't think lack of content is a major issue, but it really depends on which format you're after. It seems a lot of new ebooks on Amazon have a Kindle edition option. It might take yet another format war before ebooks take off, which could get ugly considering Sony is one of the players. Sony's trash talking would make Muhammad Ali blush. Just ask the poor suckers in the HD-DVD camp. Which format is technically superior won't matter if it comes down to a marketing war. Of course, the final question is, do people actually want to ditch paper for an ebook? If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably more tech-savvy than Joe Public, so you might say yes. Still, until the average man on the street wants the ebook, it's going to be a niche product. Reading a book is a tactile experience that draws on all the senses. The pristine look of a new book, the smell of the paper, the feel of the grain, the sound of the turning pages. Okay, maybe not the taste. It depends on how much you love your books. Anyway, while ebooks will certainly grow in popularity over time, actual books will never die out. Just as movies didn't kill the theatre, paper books will survive the rise of the ebook. They'll become a luxury item reserved for special occasions. Nothing will ever replace the thrill of opening a new book for the first time.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there you go, there's an e-book. There's some fairly interesting acronyms in there that Adam introduced me to that I wasn't previously aware of. One, the DTM, Dead Tree Medium. So, the books, I think, are still, as he says, a tactile experience. There's nothing like sitting on the beach, sitting on the train or whatever it is, and reading something that you can touch, the newspaper or the likes. So,
yeah. That's a big part of it, and yeah, they've got a long way to go before they make an electronic device, even as, you know, as convenient to read just for newspapers, let alone for books that you really want to leave on your bookshelf.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, like, it is, it's physically holding a book, so yeah, maybe that's the reason why they never took off. Also, the prices that he was talking about there for some of these book readers, I guess, are still fairly pricey, but I don't know. I think there's something to be had about, you look at a book and you have a flick through the pages and you go, I'm up to chapter whatever, and you can look at a few pictures or illustrations in a book. Not quite the same on your whatever it is that you've got to read on, is it?
No, the flick through is not quite the same sort of experience, although, just thinking to, you know, we said all the same things about losing our record albums and our CDs when, are we really going to be happy with having all our music electronic? And
we can't hear the rumble of the turntable anymore. Right?
Maybe it turns out that we don't need to have the album on our shelves and we don't need to be able to, we can use Coverflow on our iPod instead of flicking through the album covers on the shelf. So
look, I like all the gadgets. I like Coverflow. I think it's really good. I like the Coverflow for pictures too, even better. On Photoshops and things like that on the new Mac. I think that's fantastic. But as you say, I do like, I went into one of the record stores recently and I wanted to buy a new CD, the Eagles to be precise, and there's two flavours on the shelf. There's the one which has got the plastic the proper CD that you would expect to buy, the Perspex cover with the sleeve and all the bits in the middle. And then there's the cut down version, which is about $10 cheaper because it's a double CD. And maybe that's they're catering for those people that just want the brown wrap, chuck the thing away, ingest the CD into your MP3 player, and you're done.
Mm. So yeah, Adam's right. There will always be books because you know you'll always want something to put on your bookshelf for certain books. Yeah, but maybe some content like the latest magazine or latest newspaper or whatever it might happen to be.
I'm currently reading Who Killed Channel 9, the book, which is
Yes.
I couldn't imagine reading that on an electronic device. You've got to sit down and go to have the hardcover in your hand, the book at night, the bed, going, look what he got up to.
Yes, so,
I think there's just some of those things which are going
to
be...
And as you say, lying in bed, reading a book before you go to sleep, and doing that on a screen that's lit up as opposed to on paper, that's a big difference.
I also think it's another mindset too, don't you think?
Because, oh, yes.
Like, I will read, I have the ABC as my homepage for the news and all that, so when I log on in the morning, you have a quick glance and you see a few images flash past. Oh, yeah, that's the news.
Yep.
And then when you go and read the story, you potentially only read the first couple of paragraphs and you get the gist of it, and it's only if it's exceptionally interesting or really pertinent to you that you read on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the nature of what the information we get now on the internet is all about, whether that be a book, whether it be a PDF download for a brochure, an instruction manual or whatever. Like how many, let's say, for example, your appliance, a CD player or a DVD player or something like that, you get the book. You're not going to sit down there and read the PDF side of thing. You want to sit down on the couch when you buy a new thing and you want to flick through that, don't you? How many people have read the PDF version of their CD player?
I've got to say that's me.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, I'll go back in my box.
Yeah, I download all sorts of manuals. I mean, in my Macintosh antique collection, you have to get manuals so that you can...
Oh, yeah, but you're downloading it because you have no choice.
Yeah, but I could print it off, but I don't.
No, the dead tree material, as Adam spoke of before.
It's interesting. You switched on, and as technologically connected as you are, you were still saying, Andrew, that you get the newspaper, the daily newspaper delivered. Is that right?
No, I don't. I don't. Only on special occasions.
On special occasions you get the newspaper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those special front covers in colour. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, it's just if you want to sit down and if you've got time to kill, and I don't, I've got young kids and I've got a busy professional life as well as doing shows like this, you don't have much time. So, but if I did have the Sunday, I dream to have a Sunday morning where you could sit down and have a lovely bacon and eggs and and a bit of nice bread and sit down and read the newspaper without, come on, Daddy, let's go outside and do this. I'd love that. That'd be really good.
Now, I have to admit that, reading the newspaper has become a late night exercise, even though it's the morning newspaper. Then the newspaper gets read very, very late in the day with a cup of tea. Now, late in the day, it's a slow down activity.
Mm-hmm.
If the newspaper happens to be lying around
there. Or it's an opportunity rather than an actual
thing. That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's a relaxing thing, as you said. It's a wind-down thing. And I agree. You need to relax. I don't find I can relax reading a screen. Maybe because I work with one every day or something like that.
No, it's a very different feel, isn't it? And that's where the display technology, if you can get a display that looks and feels and to your eyes is like paper, then maybe that's when things will start to take off.
All right. Thank you, Adam, for raising that level of discussion on the panel this evening. That was a lovely report about e-books. Adam has also emailed us, will Elgato run nicely on a Mac Mini with HD channels? Speak English? Who knows what...
The Elgato's, Elgato's a company that makes a range of digital media products.
Yep.
So TV tuner sticks and I've got that iHome device that they make. And they've got some fantastic partnering software. And the software is probably more famous than the memory sticks. So... the ITV software range, which is predominantly Mac-based, and it's bundled with all sorts of other hardware devices from other companies. Works very well on standard definition. I have no experience in HD, so I can't answer that particular question.
You would think so.
But based on their track record, they're pretty good. So
the Mac Mini, that was a small little box that you stuck under the bench and you could plug PC peripherals into, wasn't it?
You can plug everything into it, yeah.
Absolutely. How many of those have you got in your car?
I haven't yet.
What's going on?
Do you want to donate one, please call me.
Can you still get them?
They're
about $700 or something, weren't they?
$800 for the new release with the slower processor, Core 2 Duo.
Okay.
Mm.
And
nice machine.
Does it run Leopard? Can you get the big cat on it?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
And Windows. Jailbreak. All that stuff.
Fantastic. Must re-look at one of those. It'd be a bit of fun. I just need something to check my web design stuff on Safari because I can't run it up on this. But anyway, speaking of web browsers, that was a very unintentional segue, but I happen to have here a piece of paper in my hand that says Netscape finally put to the sword. AOL has released its last ever update for the Netscape Navigator. And it's encouraged. So you better download it, all you collectors, because it'll disappear. And as encouraging its remaining users to switch to Flock or Firefox. Flock's another web browser I think we've spoken briefly about here. So there you go. You've used Netscape. I think we've all used Netscape over the time.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when it first came out.
Yeah, Netscape was the browser, and people forget that there was a time before Microsoft were in charge of all web browsers. Before Internet Explorer was the big thing, and yeah, Netscape was the number one web browser. Now, yeah, AOL have sort of been the last hangers-on using Netscape with their little subscriber system. And, yeah, they tried to ditch support for it a month or two ago, if memory serves, and, yeah, they held on just for a little while longer, and now it's finally come to the end.
Rest in peace, Netscape.
The thing is, though, that Netscape lives on because Firefox...
And the Gecko engine.
Exactly, is the Gecko engine, which is the...
What's a Gecko engine? It's
just the basic underlying works, the gizmos that make the web browser work that underlie Firefox.
Okay.
And underlie underlie Netscape, the web browser. It's the same engine underneath because when Netscape basically gave up the browser wars, they open sourced their code, and that's how Firefox got started.
Oh, very good. So so as you say, it's going to live on.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The legacy will be there forever in the web, I suspect.
Speaking of living on, the EU still sceptical of Microsoft's interoperability pledge. Why do you laugh, Graham? You're very cynical over there. The EU has expressed scepticism over a recent announcement of Microsoft, that it will make its software easier to operate with rival products. Why do they snigger so? The Commission said that while it welcomed greater interoperability, Microsoft had made similar pledges before. So, yes. And, of course, there was the Open Office XML, I think, which we'll also talk about maybe shortly down the track, too, where there was a bit of scepticism and all sorts of things about that as well. So... But what doesn't work with, in your experiences, Graham, is Microsoft really just that far removed from anything else that nothing else works with it?
Well, the thing with Microsoft is that it's hard to make other things work with it because you can't get access to how the Microsoft product works underneath. You can't see what's called the source code, the way it's built. So you can't. It's hard to make other things compatible with it. And Microsoft don't release the specifications for their standards a lot of the time.
Because it's proprietary.
It's their product. They've worked hard on it. And they want to keep it secret because that's how they make their money.
And the opposite of is what Google does with the open source material, isn't it?
Yep, Google and Firefox we were talking about and Linux and all those open source products go exactly the opposite. They say, open up the source code. Anyone can see how it works. Anyone can make stuff that works with it. And the EU see this as being attractive. And I tend to agree with them.
Well, yes. You look at the business models of both Microsoft and Google, probably the two biggest players in the software online world. They're both making a good quid, and they're both using extreme ends of the wedge, aren't they? One's using proprietary, one's using not proprietary. So, when you think about it, which one do you choose?
It's an interesting contrast, yeah. Well, it makes a little bit more sense in a commercial sense if you realised what Google is. Google is not a company that makes a web browser or a search engine.
No, they provide content.
Google
search results.
Google is the world's most successful online advertising company.
Well, they buy companies left, right, and centre that do advertising too.
But that's because that's what they are. That's how they make their money, is advertising. Google is an advertising company that happens to provide people with free search engines.
And they do it very well. Because on 80%
of the... They do it exceptionally well.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Microsoft are very envious of the position that Google's in.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we're going to come back, we're going to talk about Japan, of all places, launching an internet satellite, would you believe? You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Graham Callaghan, Andrew McComb, and Justin Dunlop saving the day here on the panel this evening.
You're listening.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
the panel on Tech Talk Radio.
It's good to see that some countries take their supply of high-speed internet to the consumer, treat it as an important part of their infrastructure. Japan being that particular country that I refer to. Last week, they launched a experimental communications satellite. In fact, last Saturday they did it as part of an ambitious space program that could ensure high-speed internet access in remote parts of Japan and elsewhere in Asia.
And they safely got it through all the debris from the one that George shot down the other day.
Funny you should mention that. Yes, George got a direct hit on his one, the spy satellite.
He shot it down first go.
That's not bad. And, of course, all the cynics in China and, you know, old Eastern Bloc or Western, whatever countries they are there, thought, it's just a missile test. Anyway, I think the US have had plenty of practice with missiles in recent times. They don't need to test anymore, do they?
Well, traditionally they might not have been as good at aiming them at things as they thought they were.
Yes, yes. Anyway, the H-2A rocket carrying a 2.7-ton communication... That's a fairly heavy satellite.
Yep.
And a lot of grunt to get that off the ground. Took off over a tiny island of Tengashima, around about 1,000 kilometres south of Tokyo, the other day. The launch has been briefly delayed after a ship strayed into restricted waters.
Oops.
Whoops-a-daisy. Because you wouldn't get a hit on the head with 2.7-tonne of satellite coming down on top of you, would you? That wouldn't be very...
It'd probably ruin your day.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? So, anyway, the launch comes 12 years after the project started, due mainly to technical glitches involving launch vehicles. But anyway, good on you, Japan. You managed to get one up in the air, and that's a damn sight better than what we're probably doing here. Whatever happened to Optus B satellite? Do we still have that over here?
There's all kinds of Optus satellites up there, aren't there?
Are they? Because that used to be the overseas telecommunications company's satellite, and then they flogged it off, did something to it, and it ended up being called Optus, didn't it?
Sounds right to me. I'm not up with the current comings and goings of that lot.
So, hopefully with a bit of luck, their satellite will stay up and it'll give them lots of high-speed broadband internet coverage. So, yes. Now, how about Dodo, speaking of internet coverage, being gonged again by the ACCC for not looking after their customers? I think you mentioned this in the news too, that, what was it, Inquiry of Complaint Handling. They must have a lot of complaints. I think we talked about that with the TIO, the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman, when we were talking about what the services they provide. And Dodo was very much up there with the most complained about telcos on a per-subscriber basis, so... Yeah, do you know much more about what they're doing?
Not much more than what I read in the news, so...
Oh.
Yeah, that they're... Yeah.
All right, so there you go. Satellites for Japan and poor old Dodo copying it fairly sweet. All right, we're going to round out fairly shortly, take a break. When we come back, XML to be reviewed next week, apparently, according to all these French people, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The 3G offering in Optus is still very much by stealth.
That's right.
I'm going to throw you an advertising point.
I'm a technician. What do you want me to do?
Do you know anyone who still uses a modem?
I've got a test page up on the root of the domain.
Yeah. What's that about? How does that help me get on the phone?
The Androids are coming. Did you know?
Androids?
Androids.
A lot of unhappy campers.
Probably best if you go to the web and have a look.
Yes.
No.
I'm going for the job.
Yeah, sorry. Yes.
Well, you got enough spare time.
Why don't you?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
OpenOffice XML has been a fairly contentious product by Microsoft. They seem to like to do things twice. We have,
there was already
Open Format XML, which is really open, isn't it?
Yep.
And now we've got OpenOffice's variation of a theme, which is slightly different, apparently, which I'm not 100% sure technically how different it is, but nonetheless, it's different. Representatives from 37 countries will meet in Geneva next week to review modifications to Microsoft's OpenOffice XML document format standard, with considerations whether to approve it as an ISO standard or withdraw it from the fast-track approval process. My question is, why do you need two? But nonetheless, Microsoft forged ahead, and they have built their OpenOffice XML format. And I must admit, having had a look at Office 2007, to which I think you, JD, alluding to, you had great fun putting it on your wife's machine, is actually, the method behind its madness is actually quite good, but I guess this is common to both the XML formats.
Yep.
And that is that the file, you know, we used to store it in a binary file, a doc file, for example, or a DOC file in the Windows world. And now what happens is everything gets broken up into certain categories. So you'll have a tag which has got all your pictures and JPEGs and things in it. Then you'll have another tag which has got all your text and other things in it. And it just breaks it up like that. So
if anyone's seen the code, the HTML code that's used to make web pages, XML looks a lot like that. So you're using that same sort of a system with tags and,
yeah,
and text in between tags that to make your Word documents as you are to make your web pages.
And I guess if you want to get an idea of what it looks like, is just to go into Word and convert one of your standard word processing documents into a web page using the built-in tool, and you'll find that it creates a folder with a folder with a folder with all of these components in there.
Oh, really?
Because
I think that's, if you actually look into the DOCX file, for example, you can actually see all these little, you know, graphics things and stuff like that that are already in there. One of the benefits of the format, though, regardless of whose it is that if the unfortunate happens where you lose a bit of data or something gets corrupt along the way, you've got a good chance of getting some of it back. Whereas in the old days when it was a binary file, that was it. You're gone. You're all cooked. So. And there are a lot of big data files out there, you know, from spreadsheets through to database files, through to PowerPoint presentations, everything like that. So at least you've got half a chance of resurrecting something out of it. So, and, of course, the downside is that all your earlier projects, all your earlier software, such as Office 2003 and earlier, won't read the new file format, so we all have to get converters, which is a free download from Microsoft, I might add.
It's an easy add-on for the earlier versions of Office to just tack on the reader and the writer for the DocX format.
Yeah. Because I moved across to Office 2007 a while back in a professional sense and haven't looked back, actually. It's quite good. The only thing that does catch you out is when you think, oh, I've got to send this document to Billy Bloggs who hasn't got the right format, so you have to save it out as an earlier version. But that's the only inconvenience that I've noticed.
Copy and paste all the text into Outlook into your email and send it off to him like that.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. The send to option I've never really got fathomed out, but it does some strange things with Outlook. But nonetheless, that's just me, Matt, probably. So.
Yeah. So, now, if I understand correctly, the Office 2007 actually didn't introduce that many new features since Office 2003, but it did radically change, completely redesign the user interface for programs like Word and so on.
It did.
So
it moved all the buttons around. Very confusing.
Yeah,
but once you're used to
instead of having toolbars with buttons and menus, you've got a ribbon that changes depending on what you're doing. So if you start working on a table, your ribbon goes rip across and you get all the table type commands on your ribbon. And the ribbon's about as tall as about three or four of the old toolbars.
It is.
At the top of your screen. So how are you finding that to use? Are you finding that's a struggle to get used to? Or?
Once you've got to get your mind around it a bit. It's a new mindset and everything. Like the old traditional file save as, you've got to, that's the little round thing in the top left-hand corner of the screen these days. Once you get the hang of it, it's relatively simple and straightforward, but there are some things that I don't like about it. It actually presents a lot of tools that you would not normally use as major tools. And you go, oh, I don't want borders at this and that sort of colouring and this. I want on one ribbon, I guess, not unlike what we used to have on the old Word, where you would have a spell checker on the same line. You would have, you know, this,
yeah,
that, all the common tools.
They didn't change depending on what you were doing, so they didn't present you with choices that were relevant to what you were doing. It was always the same things were on your toolbars.
Yeah.
That's the difference. And hopefully, one thing that it might introduce you to is when you're working on something, it might put a tool there that you wouldn't normally use, but which you might find useful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because most people who use Word 2003 use 1% of its features.
Oh, that'd be me. I just word process. And, like, heaven forbid if you want to put a JPEG or something into a document and resize it. But anyway, people do that.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. One of the tools that I actually, whether they've been there before and I've just missed them or not, or whether it's something new to the 2007 format, apart from the lovely French option in the spell check for Outlook, is the ability to actually right-click on a word and just check its spelling, which I thought was
really
cool. I think
that's been there for a long while, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, well, there you go. See, it's just me. Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's what I mean. You'd load up Office 2000, I'd find some new features there that I reckon that I haven't noticed before.
Yeah.
Do you find
I think everybody uses Office in that way, though.
Yeah.
And I think that the ribbon is trying to is going to help people to find some features that they haven't been able to find before because they've been hidden away on menus.
I think that's very much on the cards. Now, in your professional experiences, Graham, how are your customers dealing with it? Is it becoming entrenched like the other offices, or everyone's still sitting
there? No, quite a lot of my customers are dealing with it by installing Office 2003.
Well, it's rolling back.
Well, no, just not upgrading.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So,
there's nothing wrong with Office 2003, was it?
No, it works really well, yeah.
And everyone's got a copy of it, and it's compatible with everybody else.
That's right. What will happen, though, is there'll come a tipping point where all of a sudden, you know, the balance of popularity will be with 2007 and not with 2003, and then everybody will sort of tip over with the balance.
Probably 2009 normally takes 2 years for a Microsoft product.
It can take quite a while, So,
especially if you come from other operating systems, although Adam's probably sitting there going, no, I don't want to know about this anymore, because he's turned over to being a Mac user. He changed. He went to the dark side, or saw the light, whichever way you'd like to look at
saw
it.
Saw the light,
yes,
absolutely.
Exactly. So, yes. Anyway, briefly before we close out tonight with our gadgets and Oddspot and website, Microsoft lifts SkyDrive out of beta. Now, I didn't know anything about this until this came across my desktop, but Graham, you've just been looking at it online.
I didn't know a lot about it either until a few minutes ago. I've been signing up to try it out. Yeah, basically, this is Microsoft doing online storage, which we've been able to get from, you know, various other suppliers for quite a while, but it looks like Microsoft might be doing it as well as anybody. Though you get 5 gigabytes of space, you can access it from any computer where you've got, they say, internet access, but in fact you need web browser access, so you're out, Andrew.
temporarily
till you sort out your web browsers. You can create different folders and have different levels of securities on them, so you can have personal folders that are only you can access. You can have folders that only your friends can access. So if you've got all your friends that you talk to on the MSN Messenger, you can use those same IDs and link them into this, so you give those same friends access to some shared files. So you might put up your photos that you want to share with your friends, but not with the entire world in there.
Well, there would have to be some form of flow-on like that, from what I can gather, because
everyone else
has already done this. Like, Google's done it with email, and you look at something like A Drive, which gives you 50 gigabytes online to store whatever you like. Great for backing up the family photos.
Yeah, but how easy is it to do that sort of security when you've already got your list of users, effectively, in your MSN Messenger or Windows Live Messenger?
Mm.
Because this links in with you log in with your same Windows Live ID, your same username and password that you've already got for using Messenger, from using Hotmail, all those things. So it just sort of plugs into all your other Microsoft World things.
That's the good thing about it. Microsoft's
so
entrenched, and they're providing this service now, which I think would be great, because it's
and I know all my friends that I would want to share photos and that with are on MSN, so that makes it that much easier.
Still, the feature I'd like to see, and it's probably going to come with the next release, would be to actually integrate this into the desktop, so you just drop into that live drive.
And that's a very valid point, yes. It looks like you do still have that web interface. You've got to upload things and go through all that messing about. You just don't just drag and drop.
Yes, be amazing what the web's going to look like in another couple of years once we become a little bit more seamless and all these formats and things set themselves down. A bit like Blu-ray and HD DVD, we've now got one, which is great.
Really?
Yep. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back in a sec with the Oddspot gadget and website of the week.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am
Residual power.
And I've got
some residual power.
You can't have enough CDMA.
Well,
listen. In terms of the volume,
over
60
fingerprints.
Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
don't open things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do it for you.
Well, this talk to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of my own!
don't know whether this is a gadget or whether this is just a Maxwell smart device here, but I couldn't resist this tonight, boys, for the gadget of the week. A firm in the United Kingdom claims to have developed a Wi-Fi laptop tracking security application that is smart enough to destroy data whenever it moves beyond the network. You're all speechless, aren't you?
Right.
That sounds to me like a really bad idea.
I'm just thinking whether this is a Maxwell smart device. Someone comes and nicks your laptop and you run out of the building and it explodes or something like that. But in all seriousness, this sounds pretty interesting, but the impact of it on an absent-minded employee could be disastrous.
Mm.
Imagine carrying all your company's secrets on a laptop and bringing it home with you by accidentally, only to be to discover that you've got a general protection failure in your thing. It comes up and says unable to find all this, that, and the other thing. But nonetheless, a future GPS-enabled connection is in the works that claims to destroy data and get photos of the culprits even without Wi-Fi. So that wasn't a gadget. That wasn't the hotspot. That was the gadget of the week. So there you go.
Very good.
A device which actually detects when you've moved out of range of your Wi-Fi network and then destroys the data on the disk. Could be handy for certain research organisations, law enforcement agencies and all that sort of stuff.
Could be.
Maybe even in the local office if you want to give your employees the absolute heebie-jeebies. But nonetheless, I think there's a use for somewhere down the track.
This laptop will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Here it is, everybody! The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
And the website of the week, this is a really cool one. ADSL2exchanges.com.au. Now, what this does, it kind of... There's a lot of information that's out there in bits and pieces all over the place, including places like Whirlpool, and this kind of concentrates it all and puts it all together in a very useful way. Basically, you put in your phone number, and it shows you where your local telephone exchange is, so you can work out how far away you are from it, and also tells you what companies have got ADSL2 available from that exchange.
Great idea.
Yep, and it even gives you a huge long list of all the plans that are available, which is absolutely marvellous. So you can work out, yeah, no more, you know, you don't start looking for the plan and then, oh, no, that provider doesn't cover my area.
That's
the right bit of information.
A very valid point, because that's always been the bane of my life. I know which exchange I'm on, but I don't know who's providing what from that exchange.
This is the solution. And you can even key, if you haven't got a phone number, you can even key in the address and it'll look it up for you.
What do you mean? Get your local exchange where you're at by putting your phone number?
You can put in your phone number, but even if you haven't got a phone number, say it's somewhere you're going to move to, you can just put in your address.
Well, that's handy. That's very handy.
So, and it'll tell you what exchange you'll be on and what ADSL plan
you can
get.
It even shows you a picture of the exchange, either.
If there's a photograph of the exchange, it'll even show you that. And you might ask, why is it important to know exactly where your telephone exchange is? And the reason is because if you're more than a certain short distance from your exchange, you can't get the very, very highest speed broadband with ADSL 2+.
So are you telling me that real estate is now being purchased on proximity to a telephone exchange?
Well, I'll tell you what. When I first got involved in radio and electronics, I was looking at, buying or wanting to live on the top of a hill. You would want to be on top of a hill where you've got good radio signals to everywhere. These days, you want to be next door to a telephone exchange.
Sad but true. What was the address again, please, Graham?
It's ADSL2 Exchanges with the digit 2, so ADSL number 2 exchanges.com.au.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, I hope I do Dr. Ron proud with this one, but this is the Odd Spot for the week. A song only audible to dogs has topped the New Zealand record chart and is looking to go worldwide. A very Silent Night was so popular amongst dog owners it hit number one at Christmas. The CD is priced at $4.35 Australian, around about $5 New Zealand, and has raised $22,000 New Zealand dollars for charity.
And it's completely inaudible to humans.
Well, I guess so.
Very much radio play.
Well, I guess maybe on FM, but then again,
I like the idea.
I tell
Christmas carols you can't actually hear. I love it.
So there you go. Something for everyone on tonight's show, as they say. All right, you have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Across the panel from me this evening is Justin Dunlop and Graham Callaghan. Thank you, boys, for making the trip in. Our special guest next week is Dr. Ron.
if he decides to make it for a change.
Yes, it'll be good. So
last week must have been too much for him.
Yes, no, in all seriousness, we do actually have a very special guest next week. We're going to be talking to Jason Sterling from the Genesis Project, not from Genesis the band, but he will be in to talk about voice recognition and biometrics, you know, using your voice for a password type sort of thing.
Yeah,
that's very interesting
stuff.
To see what happens next week. So, but make sure you all tune in next week for All and Sundry. But thank you everyone for your company this evening. Apologies to some people on the stream. We've had inundated with traffic tonight, and some of the streams have just said, no, can't handle it. So we'll look at remedying that in the short term. Until then, it's bye for now. Until next week, see you, gang.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McCollum, producer Dr. Ron Hanlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval. We'll